This is the Valley Outdoors, and glad to have you guys with us today. Ava, you and I going solo.
Hey, that's all right.
It's all good. Lots of fun stuff today. We've got the marketing director for Mercury Marine coming on, Robin Sanger. We're going to talk a lot about some of the new things they've got coming up and really the philosophy behind Mercury Outboards and give you guys an idea about what's going on there. And we've got some conversation coming up before that about some cool different baits that you may want to try and catch some of your favorite toothy critters. That and more when the Valley Outdoors returns. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference. Well, Ava, flying a little solo, that's okay.
Yeah.
Don won't give me any crap that way.
Well, no rules then, right?
No rules.
As long as we stick to the time limit.
We got everything. We're good. Solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're good. Does that mean what do we...
No supervision today.
Well, there's no swearing.
Yeah.
And we can't...
Thankfully, we don't really use too many swear words in our normal conversation.
No.
So.
No. So really, there's nothing to change.
There's none.
I was all excited. Free reign.
Yeah. Oh,
guess not. Guess not.
All right. Well.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, but fun is fishing. We get to talk a little bit about
that.
Yeah.
Let's and, do that. Stick to what we know.
So last couple weeks, the pike bite has been pretty doggone good on the river. And so most everybody thinks, okay, pike, I'm going to throw, five of diamonds or, some type of a spoon or something like that. And, so we went out last week, hot weather, and proceeded to have an absolute blast.
Hey, question. Are the low levels on rivers and lakes, that's beneficial to fishing, isn't it?
Not necessarily.
No? No. Okay.
It increases water temperature. There's less flow. There's less volume. There's less fresh water coming in. So it's not oxygen levels drop. A lot of different things happen.
Okay.
So there's detrimental things that happen.
Interesting. Because so. I saw a post from a friend's dad, and he was like, yeah, low levels, but the bite was great. And
yeah. Well, and it's also cyclical with the bug bite. And right now, the bug hatch, and the bite goes down when the bug hatch goes up. It's usually the case.
Yeah, because there's overabundance.
As long as you, if you can find places that don't have the bug hatch and they're anticipating there's bugs, so you can imitate with different crawler, like Slow Death is a crawler bug hatch imitator, and it works quite well.
All right.
But the pike bite was fun.
Yeah,
not had that much fun in a long time. I decided to try something it's been a bait that's been... underutilized but talked a lot about lately is swim baits. And a swim bait is basically what it looks like. It's a minnow that has a paddle tail on the back of it so that it wiggles side to side, and it's out of soft plastic, and you put a jig head on it, you throw it out, and you retrieve it slowly or swim it or lift it, drop it, that kind of thing on retrieve. And so the other guys, there are two guys in the boat that I was fishing with, they were using spinner blades, big spinner bait stuff, like musky stuff. And I decided to throw a swim bait, kind of a greenish colored swim bait, because I figured pike like
green things.
Yeah, they're out in the green and the fire tiger kind of thing. And lo and behold, it was hang on. It was amazing. What a fun ride. Really, really, really was fun. So, yeah, went after it, caught a bunch of fish. And but it was interesting because we're fishing in 3 feet of water. And just fan casting and using the 360, Mega 360, the sonar system from Hummingbird. That was one of our buddies used it and targeted those fish, and it was unbelievable. So when you're in those situations where you're looking at casting two fish and you can mark them and like, oh, there it is, cast to that fish, it's unbelievable.
Hmm.
So, but fun, Biggest was 39, I think it was, 38 and a half, and inches long. And boy, talk about fight. My arm was sore. I caught total boat, I think we had like 28 fish.
Wow.
And that was only from 5 o'clock on. And I think I caught 14. It was amazing.
Yeah, good job.
It was fun. But yeah, so just throw a mix in there. Try some swim baits. They work great for bass. They actually work for walleyes in the weeds. So don't be afraid to throw them. It's a nice slow roll over the top of weeds. They will chow on them. And just try and match the hatch and see what the fish you want. You know, if you're looking for, you've got some shad baits in there, shad type bait fish, then throw a white shad type swim bait. So,
are they pretty good, like, for weedless?
You know, the hook stays up above it. Okay. So they're okay. They're not
perfect by any means. Yeah.
But you can set them up so that they will be better. It all depends on how you do it. So as far as the setup goes. But, yeah, kind of fun.
Good job.
How about that?
Proud of you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm proud of myself. Well, smarty pants. All right. This is kind of a crazy story. Fisherman accidentally catches record-breaking fish while trying to catch bait for larger fish.
How'd that happen?
An angler in West Virginia, glad you asked. An angler in West Virginia was hoping to catch some catfish, so he needed some bait before he did. Ironically, he ended up with the most memorable part of his particular trip. Ethan Moss from Ohio went fishing with a friend in the Ohio River in April, and he was reportedly hoping to catch a big catfish that day, but he ended up getting his name in the record books for another reason. Before going after any catfish, Moss decided to catch some bait. This was when he caught a large skipjack fish. Now, they're kind of a funky, weird, really silver,
skipjack.
Looks like a little salmon kind of thing, but it's not. It's skinny. Got weird teeth. He reportedly didn't recognize skipjack records. West Virginia does, which is where he caught the fish. We started getting into them pretty good. We got one that was 19 inches. 20 to 30 minutes, I caught this one. Had no clue. I thought it was a white bass or hybrid. Flipped him over the wall, and the guy fishing next to me said, "That's a state record." His fish weighed 3.1 pounds, measured 19.21 inches. Really nice skipjack. He said he'd read a lot about it in the states down south, and the records were right there. And he was originally looking for bait, decided to hold onto the record-breaking fish. He's apparently going to have the replica mount made for the fish, but he has trouble finding a taxidermist for the job. So how about that for...
My goodness. That would be a... thank goodness that other guy was there. And was,
I know.
Like, hey.
Hey.
You did something there.
Don't throw that back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. But I mean, fishing for bait. Oh, it's too big. Get rid of it.
Skipjack.
What do you say?
I'm going to have to look that up.
Skipjack's an ugly fish. It's got teeth, but it's got a really small mouth. So they're like chasing minnows and other stuff.
Bait fish.
Yeah.
That's probably why he got one, because he was in bait fish area.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they grow to various pretty big sizes, and they stink. They really are smelly fish.
Ugh.
Yeah.
He didn't even know what it was when he caught it.
Most people don't. They're like, ew.
Do we have any of those over here?
Yeah.
Really?
On the river. Yeah.
Oh.
In Red Wing. Yeah.
Wonderful.
They have them. So, well, tell you what, folks. Stay tuned. We're going to be coming right back. We're going to be talking with Robin Sanger from Mercury Outboard. Some of the cool stuff they've got. And then just released, and maybe a hint at some other stuff coming down the pike. Be right back. Well, hello, everybody, and always like to have you guys check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com, the updated website, Ava. Pretty cool.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, outstanding. Trip giveaway, check that out. The only you can't win if you don't register.
Right. It's kind of like playing the lottery.
Ashkenam Resort, going to go fishing with us, get a chance to ride in the old 400-horsepower Mercury supercharged outboard behind the 22-foot Vexus boat.
There you go.
Have some fun with that. So that's going to be a good time for sure. And yeah, we're going to be covering different fishing techniques and everything else. So that'll be there. And it's going to be a fun trip. No question about it. And of course, check us out on Facebook. Like us, please. And we always like to have you guys check that out. So yeah, the new website's awesome. So feel free to peruse it and meander through and see what other things you can find that are new. And speaking of perusing and learning and going around to telling the story, our next guest, Mr. Robin Sanger. He is the global product trainer for Mercury Outboards and Mercury and MerCruiser. Would that not be correct, Robin?
That's right.
You get it all. Big or small, you get to do it all.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting right now with what's happening in the market.
Oh, it's amazing. I know you guys came out with something big recently. We had talked about the new big 600 horsepower unit and V12. What an absolute engineering feat. But also the nice part was you went at it as a simple thought process. Don't be complicated. Don't overthink it. But make things work that are going to be applying to the use that you're going to be addressing. It was awesome.
Well, that's one thing in our history, Eric. When you think back of what we were doing, it kind of goes back to 2009. But, you know, before our engineers would build and they will buy it with that kind of mentality. And we really focus on the customer and customer feedback and voice of the customer. And if you go back to looking at our engines, there back in 2013, we introduced a 150, which was a large displacement engine, super lightweight, very good on fuel. Then after a couple more years, we delivered basically a 75, 90, and a 115, kind of on that same platform. And the story is displacement for torque, and then it's about weight for fuel efficiency and handling, you know, and then it's about quiet operation. So that's all part of our DNA. And then from then on, those just kept going on. We went into the new V6s and the new V8s along with the new 600. So that's kind of in our DNA. You know, that's the way we're going to build engines and meet the customer demand and so on.
Well, you know, Robin, there's so many engines that are sold in that 115 to 150 category. It's a competitive, very competitive horsepower range. And, you know, having myself been in the industry for so many years and looking at those and really seeing the differences that came out. And when you guys came out with that engine, it really set the bar. And I think so many people are used to, you know, they may have an engine around that they've had forever, you know, whether it's the Optimax or the other. You really changed not just, you know, and the displacement's a big thing because everybody said, oh, four strokes, you don't have any hole shot. It's that just doesn't have the power. But by making bigger displacement engine, that 3 liter 150 is the same displacement that you had in the 200, 225, 250, and just, you know, that engine category in the Optimax two stroke engines. I mean, it's
right,
outstanding. Right. And, you know, and I know, having been in the industry, there's no replacement for displacement. And that gives you such an advantage over everybody else out there, whether it's displacement or the run quality. Those things run hand in hand. A lot of times you go for big displacement, the run quality disappears. You guys did both.
Well, we're up there in Fond du Lac, we got about 700 engineers with technicians and so on. And it takes about 5 years to build an engine at Mercury once the design is locked in. And like I say, we started off with the idea, okay, let's make displacement. People want the boat to get on top quick. People want throttle response. Maybe I'm just fishing. I got the live well full. I got a lot of gear in the boat. I want to get the boat up and get it going. Or maybe I'm on a deck boat or a pontoon or something where I got to pull the kids on the tube. Next to that, then the next part of it was that it's the way we move air into the engine to make up for being a four-stroke. And so by that, we can make more torque, more power. And the last being then was, again, going into and reducing vibration, making it quieter because people want to be able to converse on a boat and so on. So there was a lot of things that went into it. And actually up in Fond du Lac here, Wisconsin, we spend out of those 5 years that we develop an engine, there's about 26 months that those engines are in dyno cells and in what we call the endurance ITC, the endurance center, where they run them 600 hours wide open throttle, and if everything passes there, fine. If not, if they have to put a new part on or change something, oop, the clock starts again. So we burn a lot of fuel to make sure we're on track for quality, and then it goes to a boat down in Florida, and we run the engines down there just like a consumer would. So we're really, really targeted on, again, making sure we can build the performance, we can build the quality, we can take care of the reliability, but at the same time, we can offer fuel economy, make them quiet. Oh boy, no vibration. This is great. We can offer different gear cases, no matter what the application and so on. So I think it's been a win-win for Mercury, and I think the customer acceptance And because we're always on back order, right now the plant is hustling. People are working around the clock to deliver product to our dealers because the demand is so high right now.
Well, you know, and the nice part about the having the manufacturing plant, and obviously people know I worked for Mercury for over for Evinrude for over 20 years, and having a plant in the Midwest is such a nice thing. The other manufacturers don't have that same opportunity. They're long lead times, and right now it's just a matter of trying to get the parts and pieces, and much shorter lead times than the competition, which is a big thing.
Multiple vendors.
Exactly.
So we have our own foundry, as you know, Eric, where we basically cast our own low copper content aluminum alloy. And probably if you look at the engine, like an outboard engine, and somewhat stern drive, but as an outboard is a good example, if there's 1,000 pieces on that engine, we build 700 of them pretty much in-house, which means we have to go to world-class vendors for maybe the pistons or the bearings or other items. But pretty much we can control that, and that's been a big thing. And we do the same where we do die casting, you know, which is the aluminum method, or lost foam, but we also do propellers. And we're kind of lucky because here in Wisconsin, we have a stainless steel forge where we can, again, make our own stainless steel propellers, and then we can control the quality and the volume and so on. So yeah, it is unique. You know, you're absolutely right. It does help that. But again, we still hook up with world-class vendors on the stern drive stuff. We have a team that works with that. There's other markets. We have a plant that's down in Florida, not too far from Mickey Mouse and the gang, that they build all the ignition components and all the induction molding kind of stuff. So we're very integrated as far as when it comes to the pieces. And again, through over the years, we know what's involved. We know the principles. And again, now we just enforce them and we try to get them into production and we go.
You know, I think the other thing that comes into play is one of the big things for me, having dealt with my former company, is maintenance has been a big thing. And customers don't like to do maintenance, and as a general rule, and anything you can do to help that customer not have to, or if they do, let's make it easy to maintain that outboard. I mean, one of the things is maintenance-free valve train. You guys have done that. The other thing, in the 150, you've got an oil cooler that prevents degradation of oil, which is unique as well. So there's so many firsts that you guys have. Once I've done all the research on it, I mean, it's amazing what you guys have built into these engines, but it's still progressing, and you're still doing it even with the new introductions that you have coming out.
Yeah, like right now, like you just said, from our 75 through up to the 450, we got a maintenance schedule that at 100 hours, and there's a decal right under the cowling so that you can show the customer, and the customer can read this, that, okay, here's what I do at 100 hours. Pretty much you're just going to change the oil, lubricate it, do some things to make sure everything's right. Do the same at 200 hours, or you're putting it away, for winter, or taking it off for summer. But then in that third year, at 300 hours, we're saying, well, now it's time to look at that impeller. It's time to look at the spark plug. You better look at this. So we make it easy to take care of that engine, and they're going to know up front what the investment is as far as the maintenance, and the dealer can walk them through that. And just like you said, too, engines sweat internally, because the combustion chamber where the spark plug is hot. But the rest of the block where the piston's going up and down is cooled. So the engine kind of internally sweats, and that's what makes that condensation. So when a lot of people think, well, cooler oil is going to make the engine last longer, no, you hit it right on the head. It's all about making sure we don't get that constant condensation, which makes the oil look like Nestle's Chocolate Quick or something like that.
Exactly.
So again, it keeps the customer in the water, away from the dealership, and we've got the way to change the oil now. We've made it simple. It's not a messy process. So there's some things that you as an owner can take care of. But if not, the dealer is the best person, and they have qualified people that will take care of that, for the customer. But, yeah, it's gone a long way. And the last statement here is you talked about the new engine. That 600-horsepower engine we introduced is a V12, a lot of displacement. It's going to be put on bigger boats, and they're going to be multiple engines. And there's a lot of technology. There's a transmission in there and so on. Well, we've moved that duty cycle up, way up. I mean, to well over 1,000 to 2,000 hours before you got to start worrying about, pulling it out, hauling it out, doing this. And we've made it so that when you open up the cowling on the top, the little things like change the oil, change the transmission fluid. Some of those little things like that can all be done when the boat's still in the water. So again, we're progressing, and it is even going to get better and better for the consumer as far as maintenance.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to running the 400 Verado supercharged. It's going to be an absolute blast on that the Vexus DVX 22. It'll be a ton of fun. Going to get a lot of people out on that and get people exposed to that side of it. And Robin, I think we'll be having you come on and talk a little bit more, some other things as well. I do appreciate you taking the time tonight. This is awesome. Absolutely fantastic, and appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity. And again, thanks to all our customers out there. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Robin Sanger from Mercury Marine, global product trainer, and a great guy and a good friend. And thanks again, Robin. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. We're going to be back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Oh, Ava, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Knowledgeable gentleman and lots of cool products coming out of it. And being my first year running after 20 years with our other company that I was working with, and looking forward to running Mercury this year. You know, and I have to tell you, a lot of people say, oh, they give you this stuff. I have to tell you guys, I actually sat down and had to look because I had people from other companies that wanted me to run their product. And I actually sat down and investigated what I felt was going to be the closest thing to what I had run in the past. And that's exactly what Mercury has done, is they've created an engine that has the whole shot of what I was running before. They have the fuel economy. They have the key points that I really wanted to have in an outboard. And that's the reason I went that way.
Good.
I don't take it lightly because I plan on staying with a company a long time. And that's really the reason I did it. A lot of the research I've done since then also backs that up in the rest of the horsepower lineup. So pretty cool deal. So, and you know what it's all about? It's about fishing.
Yeah,
so let's get after it. Here's something for you. I don't know. I suspect there's been, if you're a fisherman and you've gone out in the lake and you fished near a dock, odds are you have encountered a Karen.
Yeah, get away from my dock.
Get away from my dock. You're casting in my dock. So I thought this was very topical.
Oh, my gosh.
Fish by Karen's dock. Don't be a Karen. Know the state's rules.
Okay.
In St. Paul, if you see what kind of confrontations can develop between shoreline anglers and lakeshore property owners or even boat owners, you can search for it on YouTube if you want. There's a ton of examples out there. In most cases in Minnesota, the angler is doing what's legally allowed, but the right of the matter depends on whether you're standing on a dock or pitching a jig or other lures towards it.
Okay.
As president of the Minnesota BASS Nation, Peter Perovich has witnessed and heard a share of disputes between lakeshore property owners and those who fish around things such as private docks and boat lifts and even rafts in some cases. We've had extreme things happen at our events, and not a lot. They've had 7 major tournaments and nearly 200 club events across Minnesota during the large fishing event on Lake Vermilion, an event that included fishers from 8 states. An angered lakeshore property owner shot a gun towards one of the participants.
No.
Yes, I saw it. I saw it. It was a video. He also fielded several email and phone threats from property owners. If the BASS Nation tourney participants encounter an irritated or agitated property owner while fishing near his or her dock or other extension of the lake, the organization advises them simply to go someplace else. We've always told our anglers not to get into confrontation. If the landowner complains, reel up and leave, not worth it. That's the guideline, even though the angler most likely is fishing legally. According to the DNR, the state law, docks are private property. The water around them is not.
Right. You don't own the water. Sadly.
Patricia Watts, policy and legal analyst for the Minnesota DNR Enforcement, provided the statute interpretation, and this is as it goes. Docks are private property. They extend from private property into public waters. It's generally lawful for people fishing public waters near docks, but it is not lawful to obstruct navigation. This would be lawful to disturb or interfere. It also would not be lawful to disturb or interfere with a person that is lawfully taking or preparing to taking a wild animal, including fish. You cannot disrupt my ability to do that if I'm on public water or public land. Perovich, who owns lakeshore property north of Minnesota, said he knows the concerns of those whose docks and boats are locations favored by bass anglers and others chasing fish of the species. Fish like the habitat, obviously, of docks and such structures, and anglers gravitate to those locations. And really, what it comes up to is the guidelines are just follow. If people are out there yelling, get out of there, really is what it comes down to. Seldom does it matter where it ever gets to the point of having law enforcement, which is good. And there's been just 18 cases of charges brought for an angler or hunter harassment since 2015. The biggest thing is we want homeowners to know that we don't mean them any harm. We don't intend to mess up your docks. We're just fishing.
That's usually how it goes. But, I mean, if you see the landowner out there fishing on their dock and then you come by and are like just hanging out and fishing, you know, it's kind of like, well, you could move on to a different dock where somebody's not standing there.
If you're fishing,
so I get it, but
yeah, and if you're fishing there and somebody else is on the dock is fishing, obviously that's the case.
Yeah,
so
yeah, don't just yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Great show.
Yeah,
thanks everybody for hanging out and listening to us. I had a lot of fun. Ava, thank you. And we are the Valley Outdoors. Eric Olson and Ava, we're out next week. Well, see what we're going to do. Bye.